Welcome to Discover Ag, where every week we discover what's new in the world of agriculture. We're your hosts, Natalie Kaborik, a rancher and pharmacist from Nebraska.
And Tara Vanderdusen, a dairy farmer and environmental scientist from New Mexico. And together we bring you our professional farming opinions on a variety of trending topics in the ag and food space so you can better understand our food system and feel connected to the hands that feed us. Welcome to episode 90 of Discover Ag. Discover Ag is brought to you in part by Case IH. To the men and women at Case IH, farming is a way of life, a life they live every day on millions of acres across North America. Get to know the farmers who work at Case IH and see how they bring that perspective into everything Case IH does. Visit builtbyfarmers.com to see their stories and to even share your own. Built by Farmers, Case IH, a proud sponsor of the Discover Ag podcast.
Before we get started, I just need to share the good news with everyone. Our ranch got rain last night. I'm so excited. I don't actually know how much because Luke empties the gauge first thing in the morning before I ever get a look at it. But like so many areas, we needed it so badly.
We got rain too. I feel your excitement. Actually, we've been getting rain almost every day since Wednesday. It's crazy.
Tooting the rain horn, I see.
Well, I'm tooting the rain horn with also humbling experience of losing my roof in the storm. And my podcasting studio literally was flooded as of Thursday morning. So,
oh my gosh, that's right. I totally forgot you were texting me that night, all the videos and the damage.
I was like freaking out. I was like texting you, the kids. You know how you're when you're in, I don't know, you can't like freak out in front of your kids. So I was just like freaking out to you and our friend Ashley. And the girls were like, is everything okay? I was like, everything's totally fine. And then my text is to you. It was like, we don't have a roof. Like I just heard it blow off.
Oh, nothing to be alarmed about. The water pouring in, all part of fun and games. Relax, girls. It's fine.
Actually, we are podcasting today thanks to Guinevere. She, like, as the storm was getting really bad and I was like, Daniel, I think we lost our roof. Guinevere was like, Mom, I think we should get your computer and, like, all your podcasting stuff out of the room. And I bet it wasn't even 1 minute after she helped me carry everything out that water just started pouring through the fan and the fire alarms. All the fire alarms in our house started going off because water was coming out of them. And so thank you, Guinevere, for saving the podcast studio.
God bless Guinevere. I know, what would seriously. Guinevere do?
I know. What would Guinevere do? She would save the computer.
I love that child. All right. On a different note, how was the weekend?
Oh, you know, just like super low key, just chill. Like not a lot happened this weekend. What about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that.
I say that as I'm still wearing my Indy 500 jacket. I'm podcasting with it on.
You say that to rub it in my face because I have never experienced the fear of missing out to the extreme level I experienced it this weekend watching you at the Indy 500.
I know. That's why I didn't want to jump in today and be like, oh my gosh, it was fabulous. So it was just, you know, it was fine. It was cool. It was whatevs.
You say that, but yet you still wore your bomber jacket to the video.
I also brought toys. Daniel purchased the Good Rancher Indy car. So I now have a toy Indy car with Good Ranchers wrap in my house. So
I'm dying. Only Daniel.
Only Daniel. If you followed in my stories this weekend, Daniel and I went to Indy 500. We actually, that started because the dairy group, like Indy and dairy is a really big thing, which is actually something we'll get into later. But the dairy group, I think it's American Dairy Association, asked Daniel and I to have the green flag. That's how this whole thing started. And we had the official green flag, and the green flag was like traveling around the country. So our stop was the New Mexico stop, and we got to wave it. And I told them, I was like, yeah, we're happy to do that, but we really want tickets. And so they got us some tickets, and we went there. And then Good Ranchers, our sponsor of the podcast, found out we were coming, and they actually have a driver and a suite and the whole nine yards. And so they asked us to hang out with them. And I text you Saturday night and I was like, I don't know what you have to do to get on a plane to come, but you need to come right now. And you did not because you have like responsibilities and a life.
Yeah, we had to breed 200 cows the next day and then I think another 100 plus the following day or else I would have been there in a heartbeat. I already have it written down on my calendar next year. I know Good Ranchers has the same spot reserved. So they're stuck with us. Their sponsorship is unable to be voided for another full year until I can experience. It's so just trying to absorb it through your stories. It looked like such a good time.
It was really, I think it's Daniel said it best. He was like, this is going to be one of those times where if the rest of our life, every time I'm going to be like, do you remember that time, Daniel, that I brought you to the Indy 500, like for the all of eternity. But it was actually so cool. The dairy aspect and like the beef aspect, like it was just a really great venue. I feel like to highlight those two things, Good Ranchers just crushed it. Like if you guys haven't ordered beef from them yet, go do it. Like use our code Discover because it was incredible to see how excited people were. Like they had an activation tent that was amazing. They sold so many boxes. I just kept thinking like they are doing such a great job of like targeting the right people, sharing about, you know, like American beef and what is so great about all the things you and I talk about with beef. And I don't know, it was really cool to see up front, but I'll stop rubbing it in now.
No, I think that's why I was having such bad FOMO is because like last weekend I missed PBR and I was supposed to meet Shaylee and Marika down there. And so kind of the same thing. I was like, oh, I'm so bummed I'm missing out. But I feel like this weekend was a different level of missing out for me because like you said, it was this pairing of this really amazing event I've never experienced before that I'd love to. But on the same note, it was paired with something we're also so passionate about, which is like beef and dairy. Like you said, it was just this collision that I thought was so cool. And honestly, when I was watching the stories, I saw someone talk about how there was like almost 500,000 in attendance there. And I was like, that is so amazing that Good Ranchers is getting American beef in front of that many people in such a cool, unique way. And the same thing with how involved dairy is. I'm like, it's just so cool that we had such amazing representation.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned how many people. It's actually the largest sporting event I think in the world, in the United States. Like it is the largest sporting event. I don't know exactly. Don't quote me on the world or the nation, but everyone kept talking about it. There's so many people. It's wild to see. The track is like 2 miles long. So if you just think about the fact there's like stands all the way around that on the inside and on the outside. And a cool thing. So the driver for Good Ranchers didn't win, but he's a part of Team Penske, like Penske Oil. And the other driver for Team Penske won. So it was just, we all were freaking out. The last 10 laps. I mean, I knew nothing about Indy cars going into this, but the last 10 laps, I was like, I'm a diehard Indy fan now. Like that's it. I'm here for it. Like I'll never turn back.
I think they're doing a pretty good job too. And we'll actually get into that first article. Cause our first article, spoiler alert, is about milk at Indy. Before we transition to that though, you guys, I do want to give one last plug to Good Ranchers. Because like Tara said, if you have not checked them out, please do. They are American meat delivered. We love them so much. We've talked about them before on the podcast. 100% of their meat is born, raised, and harvested in the US. So you can feel really good about supporting farmers and ranchers here in the United States. They lock in your price and they donate meals. Go check them out. We'll link them in our show notes. Oh, and don't forget code Discover. Okay. All right, transitioning into our first news piece you guys need to know this week, Ditch the Dairy. Advocates press for end to Indy 500 milk drinking tradition. IMS responds. An anti-milk campaign sponsored by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit advocacy organization endorsing plant-based diets and alternatives to animal research, is putting up billboards saying winners actually don't drink milk, a mockery of, quote, winners drink milk, a phrase promoting the beloved tradition of the Indy 500 winner chugging milk in victory lane.
So fun facts about this. This actually started in 1936, the entire like chugging milk at the Indy 500. And the whole slogan is like, winners drink milk. It's everywhere. The airport has a whole activation center where you can go and take selfies and everything. But it started in 1936 when a guy, Lewis Meyer, won for the third time. Supposedly he had drank milk every time he won, but the third time was the first time he like got it on camera. His mom had always told him to drink buttermilk. So the picture is him holding up three fingers and sipping a bottle of milk. And that was when they captured the moment. And then like, it was kind of on or off for a little bit, but then like, I think it was by the 50s, it was like full blown. People were drinking milk. And then that was when the dairy industry actually like teamed up and they would actually like pay the driver at the end to drink milk. And so it's a very long tradition.
As we mentioned in the intro, neither of us are Indy girls either. So I actually had no idea. And I remember when you were telling me that you were going to the Indy and you had the flag and I just didn't get what was going on. Like why you'd have this flag and why dairy is going. Obviously now full circle, I get it. It was so cool to learn, like you just kind of spoke about, the history of how long dairy has been involved in this. And I love the pivotal story of how it started. You know, it was very natural. It was not a like creative campaign. They just recognized the moment that like something could be spurred from it.
I think though, I want to spend a few minutes on this moment because it gets into like the heart of this article of them like quote unquote possibly changing this tradition. it is so much more than just like people drinking milk. Like our tickets was the winner last year with the milk pouring over his head. And when you like Daniel and I walked by, because we walked from like our VRBO to the Motor Speedway, we were walking and like restaurants have, you know, like bars outside. People were drinking their beers out of milk, glass bottled milk. We went to dinner one night in downtown at a really nice restaurant. The water that like the server poured our water from was a milk bottle. Like everything is rooted in tradition, and it's beyond the milk. Like everything about the Indy 500, I think that's what was so cool about it, was about tradition, and milk is one of those traditions. You know, you have the brick road that still runs, the original brick road that runs down like the track, like so many traditions, and they are hardcore about them.
They are. So I was reading more about kind of the whole process, I guess, and they pull the racers and they give them the option of whole, 2%, and skim. And I thought it was interesting. 28 came back for whole, 3 came back for 2%, and 2 selected skim. And then basically whoever wins, they have that choice like ready for them to go. But it started talking about how apparently legendary racer Mario Andretti, he must not drink milk, and he still did it. Like it's that rooted in tradition that there's basically no out. He was quoted as saying, not everybody enjoys it, but because it's happening at that point and the meaning behind it, all of a sudden milk tastes very good. And I was like, yes. I love it. I love that people just really embrace it.
Mario Andretti drove by in a car while we were down at the pit. It was so cool. And his grandson was racing. So it was like, I don't know. It just felt really cool.
I'm laughing so hard because you sent me that photo and I thought it was Robert De Niro. And I was like, why is she taking a photo of Robert De Niro?
I sent it to my dad and father-in-law and they cared a lot more than you did. Okay. I just want that to be noted. You were clearly not the right target audience for that photo. But yes, every single person like drinks milk. So it's actually funny. The winner, the guy who won, he did a video last week. So obviously long before he won, and they were asking him, what is your favorite tradition of the Indy 500? And he said drinking milk. And then he was like, I've obviously never got to drink the milk because I've never won, but I hope to one day. And like watching that yesterday, knowing like obviously he won and he drank the milk was, I don't know, it was really cool to just like know that that was what he was most like excited about, obviously winning. But
that made me so emotional. Okay, so pivoting back to the article, it's not just a billboard they put up. They also sent a letter to the, I guess maybe the planning committee, I don't know, some committee at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Basically, they were urging the speedway to give the winner plant-based milk or water instead. And I love the response because the Indianapolis Motor Speedway actually came back and they said they have no plans to change the current milk tradition. And they're just basically like, shoo, move along. We're not having it.
So when we were there, I did not see a single billboard. So I don't think they're as like prevalent as maybe this article made it seem. But yeah, Indy Motor Speedway has zero plans of changing the tradition. And this goes back to even like, I feel like Good Rangers picking such a great sport to like get behind, because I don't think anyone there wants to change that tradition.
I could not get out of my mind how I feel like alternative milks campaigns are always just mocking milks campaigns. Like they're never coming up with their own content. It's never an original idea. Basically, they take an idea or something they see the milk community do, and then they do a spinoff of it. And it goes back to when you talk about like promoting your product without bashing another. Like if you don't have anything to promote your own product on, has no legs to stand on its own, it's not a very good product. And that's what I think of when I think of alternative milks and their campaigns.
I mean, that's kind of like a hill I die on regularly, is like, if you can't promote your product without bashing somebody else, like then you shouldn't be marketing your product. One of the other things about this that I thought was, I guess, not surprising is you mentioned that this is like a health group or like a physicians group that came out and said like milk is bad. Actually, their entire premise was like milk increases your chances of prostate cancer, which is not founded in any kind of like reality or science. But that was their entire thing. And it kind of reminded me of the study we talked about last week, that the most comprehensive study of meat and dairy and all those things and like all of the health benefits. And so it was kind of like, can we like get to a point where this is like a mute point anymore, where we don't talk, like say like meat and dairy are like bad for you?
Never. You think about how crazy they are, though. Going back to what I was talking about, the campaigns, they had that. Do you remember that crazy billboard about 9 out of 10 serial killers?
Yes.
And then I found another one, which I wasn't aware of. But when you mentioned the prostate cancer, made me think of it, because they took Rudy Giuliani's face and they made a got prostate cancer. I don't know if it was a billboard or what it was, but and they got in so much trouble for that. I just think it's something they're not willing to give up, and they are crazy emotional about it.
Yeah. PETA has also been pushing for Indianapolis Motor Speedway to stop the milk tradition. They have even, so I mentioned that the drivers get paid by the dairy industry. It's like a little bonus at the end for drinking milk, which I actually appreciate because it's a huge advertisement for milk, and the drivers, I feel like, should be compensated for being a part of that. But PETA is willing to offer the drivers more money if they were to select a vegan option. Nobody's taking them up on that option.
I saw that. I saw they were willing to. And again, Indy's just like, no, we have something that we're proud of. We have something rooted in tradition. We have something that brings our fans together to bond and celebrate over. We're not interested. I think I just want to sum it up by applauding the dairy industry. I feel like, again, you guys have done an excellent job at campaigning for your product. It's kind of what I was thinking when I was thinking about how crazy plant alternative campaigns are. I was thinking about how cool milk's campaigns have been, starting with Got Milk back in 93. And I just feel like you guys have major celeb endorsements. I found a video of like Muhammad Ali promoting milk. Like, I just feel like you guys have done a really good job. So kudos to Indy, kudos to milk. And I don't know, maybe one day we'll eventually see no more crazy billboards. But until then, we'll be here on Discover promoting the truth.
Maybe we can get them to be like, winners drink milk and eat beef, you know?
Winners listen to Discover Ag.
Ooh,
maybe that can be what they do next year.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll work on it.
We'll send them a letter just like this group did. We'll send the president a letter and say, can you actually change your deep-rooted 100-year history to say winners listen to Discover Act? Stay tuned, you guys. Okay. Okay, before we get into our next article, I do want to highlight something we're doing this summer. We have a really fun summer series. It's going to be a debunking series. And what we're going to be doing is watching some different documentaries. Most of them are on Netflix. Every month, so June, July, August, we'll be watching two videos. One that is a negative video around agriculture. And we're going to be going through all of those, kind of debunking them. And then we're going to pair it, though, with a positive documentary where we're going to be where agriculture really shines and is highlighted. And we're going to be bringing on a lot of special guests. It's going to be so exciting.
Yeah, I think the coolest part is the guest experts we have on to speak. We're bringing on a dietitian. We're bringing on people who have produced the film. So we have a lot of great people bringing immense value to things that Tara and I talk about. And I'm excited. I hope you guys are excited too. Next week, we're kicking it off with Tuesday watching Game Changers. So if you want to have watched the docuseries ahead of time, watch Game Changers for next Tuesday. And then the following week will be Beyond Impossible. All right, moving into the second article you guys need to know this week, titled John Kerry Declares War on U.S. Farmers. Government farm confiscations not off the table. Small farms are significant emitters of nitrogen, according to Biden's climate czar, John Kerry, who is pushing for the U.S. federal government to crack down on farming in America to combat, quote, global warming.
We received this article a lot from our discos of us, them wanting to cover it. And I think it goes back to people really following everything that's going on in the Netherlands, that the Netherlands, we've been following them like, for almost a year now, it seems like what's been going on there between the protest and then the Netherlands government saying they were going to confiscate 3,000 farms. And then now this. And I think one of the things that when we talked about the Netherlands was like, we want to kind of keep an eye on what's going on over there because it could, you know, kind of bleed into our politics and what's going on here in the United States. And so I think when people saw this article, it really put up those red flags for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's very triggering for people knowing what is going on elsewhere with the fear that it could, as you said, bleed over into our U.S. policy.
Yeah, I mean, this is about the World Economic Forum, the UN. It's kind of like their people are calling it their anti-farming agenda. The Netherlands is kind of the testing ground where they're offering farmers 120% of their farm's values through a buyout program. And I don't know. If I had to guess, it just like put an idea in a lot of politicians' heads of like where to go with this farming. And I think where I kind of want to start with like the numbers is John Kerry's big claim was that, quote, I'm quoting him, this is not an accurate number, but I'm quoting him, 33% of all emissions, depending on how you count it, are from agriculture. Not true. We know, we've talked about this, 14.5% of emissions are from agriculture.
Yeah, I have written down, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, agriculture generates 10 to 12% of greenhouse emissions globally, which I have never seen that low before. So I was interested to see that as the juxtaposition. Like you said, typically we see the 14.5% for global numbers. What John Kerry is quoting, the 33%, is the food system as a whole. So it's including packaging, transportation, waste management. All of that is what is the, you know, third of global emissions. So again, I just think it's very deceiving. People love to cherry pick the statistics that support or create the headline or the splashy title, you know, for their benefit, essentially. And that's exactly what John Kerry did.
Yes. I also have a fear of sounding like a broken record. His mission is to be net zero. And you and I talk regularly how we are on board with lowering emissions, making improvements. How low is low enough? Like, how exactly does he plan on producing food?
Exactly. I wrote down what is acceptable percentage, because the other thing that I have a problem about when we just make it about the percentage is I don't feel like numbers tell the full story, right? So they don't give an accurate depiction of the pros of agriculture. They just kind of highlight a number. And you can't talk about like the improved soils, carbon sequestration, improved water management, biodiversity protection, like the list goes on. And none of that can be talked about or highlighted or even associated with when you just like focus totally in on a number.
But even when we do talk about the numbers, we just talked about how you can pick whatever number to make it work for the most alarming for you. And so even the numbers are problematic for me because looking at it, like we're talking about methane a lot in this conversation. 81% of greenhouse gas emissions are carbon dioxide, not methane. Methane is about 10%. So when you see a number like, you know, 80% of methane, you have to remember like that's 80% of 10%. Like very small numbers, but like you see a big number and it blows everything out of proportion.
So he is actually getting quite a bit of backlash on it. And before we move into that, I want to highlight some of his sound bites. You already kind of talked about how I feel like a big portion of what's triggering people and making the news is the 33%. But he also had some pretty crazy quotes to go along with that. And again, they're all rooted in, you know, scare tactics and preying on fear, essentially. He said, "You can't continue to warm the planet while also expecting to feed it. I refuse to call it climate change anymore. It's not change. It's a crisis. Without cutting agriculture emissions, the world may not reach its goal of limiting global warming." And so just a lot of, like I said, fear-based tactics.
I put down a lot of his quotes too. They were wild. 9 years left to avert the climate crisis. And it's funny you mentioned that word change he meant, like talked about, because last week I talked about how much words matter. And this, like now that I'm like have that as my like focal point when I'm reading these articles, I was like, oh, again, like that word climate change isn't enough. He needs it to be a climate crisis. So it's like that just fear of doom. He also mentioned 15 million people are dying a year because of greenhouse gas emissions. I looked up this stat over and over again from every source, and I could not find anything even close to that. I found a stat from a more reliable source that said 9 million people, which is still a lot, I'm not discounting that, are dying because of greenhouse gas emissions or because of carbon dioxide pollution. But he just, it seemed like he really got the biggest number he could and like threw it in all of our faces every chance he got.
So moving into the backlash, did you see some of the sound bites from, I guess, like the ag community?
Yes.
And how did you feel about it? Because I feel like I may get some backlash myself for what I'm about to say about some of the, I guess, support that came out for agriculture.
You go first so you can get the backlash instead of me.
I was not a fan of what some of the like quotes supporters were saying. We can read through a few of them if we want, but I felt like they really did not paint agriculture in a good light. I felt like it was very much so like we're having a pity party. I felt like it portrayed us as like very victim mentality. I was just not a fan of them. And maybe we should read them so that people have a better grasp of why? Because did you not like them either, I'm guessing?
No, I've had this like notes in my app or my notes app. I have this blog that I've never ended up publishing, but it is, can ag stop playing the victim? And I kept thinking about that when I was reading some of these quotes, that like making ourselves look like the victim in this case, I don't think is doing us any favors. And they were not good sound bites that like bolstered our, you know, the science that we have to offer this conversation.
Let's see a couple of the comments. We strongly urge you to denounce Carrie's remarks. These comments are a blatant slap in the face to the hardworking individuals that spend their lives sustainably producing our world's foodful fuel and fiber, which yes, we do. Like that's an actual statement, but there's a lot of other hardworking individuals in the US that do a lot of other important things too. So I just feel like it's very, I don't know, it just doesn't sit right with me. Let me try and find another one here too. If climate czar Carrie ever spent a day with the real stewards of the land instead of flying around the world on his private jet, he'd have known that already. Like, I don't know. I would have given a different soundbite. I wish it would have painted us differently.
My other issue that I had with this is the methane conversation about how we've talked about the pros of methane are the fact it's short-lived, and that if we changed practices to reduce methane, we could have a really big impact on like the warming potentials from greenhouse gas emissions. But my fear every time we have that conversation is, when will that get used against us? Like, oh, well, because methane's short-lived, you guys should be doing more because you can have a short-term impact. And I felt like this article was definitely hinting at that. Like they talked about how rapidly reducing methane would have an outsized impact on near warming potential. And I feel like we're getting to the point where it's going to get used against us, that it's like, well, you guys need to do more because carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere is going to be there for 100 years at least, whereas you guys can do something now. And while I appreciate like that we can, I don't think it's ag's responsibility to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and solve the climate crisis for all of the other sectors either.
Well, and I'll never forget the one time you said, like, what is ag's true role? Is it to provide food or is it to combat climate change? And I think we need to keep that in mind, I guess, because sometimes I feel like we're tipping the scales too much, that we're getting focused so much on sustainability that we're losing the efficiency, productivity portion that is agriculture as well.
I agree. And I think it's also worth noting, I mentioned some of the graphics that I kind of pulled up about methane, like the global sources of methane, almost half of all methane emitted is natural sources like wetlands. And it's not just animal agriculture. You know, the fossil fuel industry emits just as much methane as us. Rice is a big producer of methane. Landfills are a big producer of methane. Like there's a lot of different sources to methane besides just animal ag. But for some reason, I think when you say methane, the only thing people can think about is burping cows.
100%. Whoever slogan that did a really good job of making that stick. Yeah. So one of the other things I didn't quite like about all this either, as you said, this bickering, essentially, there might have actually been good that happened at that conference. And none of that is getting highlighted because all people can do is pick out John Kerry's sound bites and focus on that. I read that there was some substantial funding that's going into the initiative for like basically innovative climate change, food security, and agriculture. You know, they want to put investments in support into scaling agriculture and climate innovations. And none of that is being talked about.
But yeah, there was really good things that came out of it. And I guess as we're getting ready, like this is all leading up to COP28, which is coming up in November in Dubai. And so I was like, can we focus a little more on the positive so that when we get to COP28, we can be talking about like, you know, where are we putting this increased funding? What are we seeing that's coming out of the funding that we're putting in? Well, you know, we here in the US, the USDA just did that huge grant, doubled the money that got invested into climate smart technology. So let's be focusing on some of that. And I think it goes back to like what we've even talked about in the Netherlands. Like every time you cut ag in a place like the Netherlands or the United States, where we're doing research and we're putting in funding, it's a real loss to our entire ag technology world. And let's focus on those goods instead.
So I think my last point for big picture, when we talk about like this quote unquote attack of agriculture and people's wanting to, you know, cut all our numbers and have us make all these changes and everything. While I did not agree with a lot of the ag supporting sound bites, there was one I did agree with. And it was a quote that said, "Farmers and ranchers are the lifeblood to our food security. And a nation that cannot feed itself would not be a nation at all. And to me, that also needs to be weighed into the bigger picture when we have these discussions, is food security. I will never forget, I listened to a podcast that they were talking about how they were living in Aruba during COVID. And Aruba is a big importer and relier on other nations to feed their country. And the podcast female was talking about how she was so fearful when she heard the news that she did not actually know if she'd be able to feed her family. She did not know when they get food. She literally did not know how they would maybe possibly survive this. And I never want to be in that situation. And I do not think we focus on food security enough.
I didn't even write that part down because I knew. I was like, Natalie's going to cover this. I know this is your soapbox right now that you are on. And it's a good one because you're absolutely right. Like, that's, we need to be able to feed our nation within our borders. And I'm all for importation and exportation, but there is something about having food security and that it's a piece of national security. All right. Before we move on to the third article, we want to give a shout out to one of our favorite podcasts, Farm for Profit podcast. It consists of a banker, a farmer, and a realtor slash auctioneer who deliver their weekly shows using an unbiased and fact-based approach. Their mission is to help provide resources for their listeners and help their farms achieve high levels of profitability in an entertaining fashion. And Natalie and I were recently on their podcast, and we will say it was very entertaining. They're so fun. They're a great set of co-hosts and have really great conversations. So they want to motivate their listeners to run their farms more like a business and help ensure that the future generations will be able to do what they love. They do have two episodes a week. The Farm for Profit is released every Monday and has the mission to help farmers achieve higher levels of profitability. And the Farm for Fun is released every Thursday, and it brings in different guests like Natalie and I to highlight their achievements and what they're doing in agriculture. So there's a little bit of variety there for everybody to check out. And we really think you guys would love it as much as we do.
All right, moving into our last and final one. This is a heavy hitter. Title: Lab-Grown Meat's Carbon Footprint Potentially Worse Than Retail Beef. Lab-grown meat, which is cultured from animal cells, is often thought to be more environmentally friendly than beef, because it's predicted to need less land, water, and greenhouse gases than raising cattle. But in a preprint, not yet peer-reviewed, researchers at the University of California, Davis have found that lab-grown or cultivated meat's environment impact is likely to be orders of magnitude higher than retail beef based on current and near-term production methods.
So I have very little to say about this, actually. And it is, seriously, are we surprised? Like, who is surprised by this?
Like last week when we were like, duh, obvi.
Obvi. Maybe that's our new one. Each week we have an article that we're just like, duh, obvi. Like, so glad this is finally in the news.
So before we dive into this, I do want to say, I called it. If you go back to episode 78 on April 6th, Italy bans lab-grown meat, I am quoted. My problem with lab-grown meat is as yet to prove, one, anything from a health standpoint, and two, anything when it comes from a sustainability point. So I'm feeling very smart today, you guys. It's giving prophecy. It's giving sightseer. It's giving I told you so.
Oh my gosh. The fact that you went and quote found your quote, I'm like dying a little on the inside, but I love that for you.
Well, I made it into a reel. So it's very fresh in my mind because it's on my Instagram page and I tweeted it as well, because I firmly believe that. I believe that they had nothing to prove. And now that they're looking into actually doing some studies on it, which again, I think it's important to note that this has not been peer reviewed. It's still in the very early stages. But now that they're getting into the weeds of it, it's showing what so many of us were saying we thought we'd see. Like, obvi, if you have to manufacture something, it's not going to be more natural than just what we have, you know, from our resources and our ecosystem as it is.
Absolutely. If you have to grow a food inside a climate-controlled lab with pharmacy-grade products, ingredients, which we'll get into because that's a whole other part of the conversation, it's obviously going to have a higher carbon footprint. I do want to note that, yeah, you said it's not peer-reviewed yet, but I mean, it will be. Like, this is pre-published, and it came from University of California, Davis. Like, and what I think is actually fascinating is you could say like, oh, they're in ag school, so they're obviously going to say that. They actually have, UC Davis has a cultured meat consortium that's doing research on lab-grown meat, and they see a lot of benefits in actually the pharmaceutical space versus the food space, and think that's like better suited for like lab-grown meats, which is fascinating conversation all in itself. But I just think it's worth noting, like, that weighing. Like, UC Davis has, I feel like, maybe a horse in both races on this. Like, they're interested in research and technology and advancing lab-grown meat while also supporting agriculture. So I thought they were really great to be the ones to be doing this research.
So a little bit about this study. I think it's important to note that it conducted a full life cycle assessment, which if you heard us talk about our issues with, and we'll actually talk about it coming up on some of our docuseries conversations, but there have been past studies, Livestock's Long Shadow, that studied life cycles for agriculture and, you know, non-life cycle for, you know, transportation, whatever industry it was. So I think it's very important that they studied side-by-side life cycle assessments. And basically the results they found are suggestive, as we read in the summary, that cultured meat is not inherently better for the environment than conventional beef. It found that the purified media is 4 to 25 times greater than the average for retail beef.
Yeah, I think here we are in 2023. Can we just get a life cycle assessment on every single thing so we can be comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges? I think that is an issue I really have had for a while and continue to have it. Like, if agriculture, the dairy industry, livestock, all of them have been able to do a life cycle analysis study, why can't every other sector do that as well, especially before they go out making these claims, like you said on episode 77, April 6th, whatever it was. Like, how can you make, like, you shouldn't be allowed to make an environmental claim until you have conducted an LCA on your product that is, like, rooted in science. And otherwise, what you're saying, I don't want to say it's not fair, because I get life's not fair, but it doesn't
make
sense.
Pity party, Tara. We are not throwing ourselves pity party.
I know. And that's why I said that. I was like, I don't want to say it's not fair, but, like, you're not rooted in science, so you can't make claims. I mean, yes, you can. In 2023, you can make claims about whatever you want, but it shouldn't be, like, taken with such weight then, or with such, like, truth to it when it's not.
So one of the things I thought really interesting, and you hinted at this earlier, but they talked a lot about how lab-grown meat has to have this, you know, highly refined growth media, which growth media is essentially what you're using to help the animal cells multiply. So it's, you know, it's in the lab, it's this product in the little petri dishes. And what they talked about is this question that, is cultured meat production actually a pharmaceutical product or a food product? And I was very happy to see that statement question sentence being put out there, because I think there's a lot of validity to it. And I think we should be paying attention and maybe weighing, is it pharmaceutical or is it food?
That is the whole issue. Does it need to be food grade or pharmaceutical grade ingredients? And I'm not going to lie, I kind of left my notes at that because you are an in-house pharmacist. So I wanted to get your perspective on it and get your take, your expertise on this. Like, what do you think about that?
Oh, I have no idea. But I think it's interesting that, because you're asking me the question on a micro.
I literally just built you up. You are our expert. You are a pharmacist. Oh,
I have no
idea.
I'm a pharmacist. I am not, like, a lab, you know, although I did do time in a lab, like, study in undergrad. But you're talking about on a micro level, you know, asking, do we need the pharmaceutical or the food grade media product? Like, what's the difference? I think it's more interesting to focus on the big picture. When people talk about, again, food, whole foods, and they want to bring into these alternatives, these plant-based meats, they're essentially calling this a pharmaceutical product, and we're going to insert it into our diets and say it's more healthy than the whole food red meat. Like, that's my big picture takeaway. This is a pharmaceutical product, what we've been saying. This is an actual factory farm.
I think my big takeaway is, when compared to efficient beef systems, it outperformed cultured meats on all levels. It didn't matter if it was food grade, because food grade helps reduce the emissions compared to pharmaceutical grade. But beef still outperformed traditional beef systems efficient beef systems outperformed the cultured meat. That's my big takeaway. So even if we get this conversion to food grade, it's still not going to be enough. Beef is still doing a really great job. And it goes to what we've been saying about how much beef we produce in this country, for how much emissions and how many cattle and all those things. You know, the U.S. beef system may have, you know, some issues that we've talked about and we've gone into, but, like, we're actually doing a really good job. I just want to, like, pat ourselves on the back for 1 minute. Okay, I have a hot take that I want to tell you. as heard at the Indy 500. A little inside scoop.
This is how we're ending the show. We're done. We're done. Lab Mace, we're closing.
No. This is about Lab Grace. Oh, okay. It's relevant. I promise. It's relevant. Don't worry.
Okay. Hot take. Let's hear it.
And just in case, if you were wondering how much fun I am to have in a suite at the Indy 500, this is what I was talking with people about. that there was conversation by some that we should rename the USDA. And it should be USDAT for technology, ag and technology, to encompass lab grown, cultured meats, cultured milks, all of these things and the technology that is behind them.
No, stupid. How
does it make you feel? I didn't even finish my question. Stupid.
No. I mean, I guess I have to hear like compelling arguments on both sides, but my initial gut is like, what's the point? Why is it needed? Why are we getting so far away from a food system that works, that, you know, in motion with nature as it is? No.
Yep. I mean, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just telling you that that's what I heard. So don't shoot the messenger. Jeez, I feel the anger coming through the episode, right through our, what is this technology we're using to record. But no, it is an interesting idea that that's where people are headed and having conversations about. And I found it fascinating when we were talking about it. And that the idea that someone would, and I say that while, earlier this week on Tuesday, we had an episode about technology and agriculture. Like, we are all for technology and agriculture, but the thought that you're going to like rename the Department of Ag to include technology to encompass like lab-grown culture cells feels a little out there for me.
It puts me on a soapbox that I will not get into, but I really do feel like as a society, we are shifting further and further away from how we are intended to thrive as like human beings at the core function. It's like a little crunchy of a take from me, but I really think we're just getting too far away from it. And I think we'll actually circle back around, but we're hitting a climactic point right now. Like you said, this would be it for me, like renaming the USDA to include technology. Like this is the peak of too much as a society.
Agreed. So, I mean, I think with that, we can end the episode. So that I guess I was ending the episode, but that's all I have to say about that. So thanks for listening to Discover Ag, where every week we discover what's new in the world of agriculture. And we will see you guys next week.
We'll see you for our fun debunking series. Have a good weekend, everyone.